And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Anatekel, Strong Voice. Welcome today, folks. It's August 9th in this wonderful year of the Lord, 2020. And I'm going to share some little bit of feedback we've been getting on the show or from the show. This is a program, of course, to unite the resistance globally and to establish common law republics. But, of course, we represent a long history going back many years. And we see snippets of that in the focus these days on common law and organizing people in common law assemblies, you know, the big necessary focus in this period of police state and fight back resistance. But the history encompasses really important things that people need to know about. And in fact, in a number of the meetings we've been having recently, three themes have come out. First of all, we can't be defensive. We've got to go on the offense. We've got to reclaim the lives, the land, the liberties taken from us. Secondly, it's a spiritual battle as well as an obvious material battle. And we have to take that whole aspect into account. We've tried to do that on various programs, but we need more of your involvement and input into that. But finally, and the focus of the show today is going to be the necessary background, especially in Canada or Kanata, formerly the Dominion of Canada, now under common law jurisdiction, the Republic of Kanata. And we summarized that recently in a statement we put out called The Crime That Requires a Republic in Canada, Essential Background for Our Common Law Movement. Now, you can get this. It'll be up soon at our site, republicofkanata.ca, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata.ca. But let me read a little bit of this, including the verdict of the Common Law Court of Justice in Brussels that found Canada and its churches, the Vatican and the Crown of England, all guilty of genocide. The statement read in part, Canada, its mainline churches, and its sponsors in London and Rome have been found guilty of genocide and of waging an ongoing war against Indigenous people and children. As a convicted criminal regime, the Crown of England and the Canadian government have lost the right to govern under international law. Canadians are therefore compelled to not only refrain from paying federal taxes, but from associating in any way with the rogue power known as the Dominion of Canada. According to law, a new political authority must be established in Canada that prevents further complicity in war crimes by its citizens by creating something never known in Canada, a constitutional republic that allows a self-governing people to free themselves of a legacy of corruption, colonialism, and genocide. Under the law of nations, Canadians are now free and obligated to actively resist and overturn their government in order to create a more just and responsible nation, unquote. And that's from the final ruling of Chief Justice of the International Common Law Court of Justice, Balthazar Garzon, on February 25th, 2013 in Brussels. So in other words, folks, we have international law on our side. It's a necessary action we're taking now, establishing the common law republic here and everywhere where genocide has struck our people and destroyed so many. So necessary background today is going to be, I'm going to be sharing previous broadcasts where we went into detail of the hard evidence contained at murderbydecree.com, which found Canada and its churches and the Crown and Vatican guilty of genocide. We're going to hear the voices of eyewitnesses to these crimes. We're going to read one of the statements that was actually released to the international community in 2017, describing what's called a continuity of genocide, how the genocide is continuing, especially under the Trudeau government, who is actively complicit with the Chinese government in wiping out native people and grabbing the resources, and actually even inviting China to station their troops on Canadian soil. Now that Trudeau himself has admitted to genocide, he must be put on trial as a war criminal, and the system of the Dominion of Canada actively disestablished. We're going to hear that today on the program, the nuts and bolts of that, as a necessary background to all the work we're doing. So I hope you find this show edifying today. Please apply the knowledge you've learned. We'll be back live next week. Stay strong. Stay clear. I thank you. And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. That's Cock of the North going out to all you fellow Gaels and Scots and Irish people, including all my ancestors.
It is June 30th. We're halfway through the year, folks. And what have we all done to make it better? That's the question we should wonder today. You've heard the news. If you go to murderbydecree.com, ITCCS updates, the latest breaking news, mass graves of indigenous women and children uncovered in British Columbia. UN asked to send peacekeepers and forensic specialists to help the recovery of these remains and the launching of the September 16th War Crimes Tribunal in Vancouver, to which Prime Minister Trudeau, we used to call his dad Turdo, and I think the appellation fits, he's been summoned along with the Governor General and 20 other people to answer these charges in Vancouver September 16th. Now, to do this kind of thing intelligently, we have to know the background, and it's been requested that today we play some of the evidence responsible for what's led to this tribunal. And we're going to do that in three parts. The first recording will be a summary of the crime. The second, a summary of the cover-up. And the third, the ongoing genocide today, the continuity of the crime. Now, the first recordings were part of the original common law court case that indicted and convicted, I call them the Dirty 30, Queen Elizabeth, Pope Benedict, 28 other people. And based on the solid evidence, you'll find at murderbydecree.com. The second audio file we're going to hear today is two eyewitnesses who went through and sat through the disgusting cover-up and whitewash of genocide called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, set up by the criminals themselves, the churches and government. And Shauna Green and Sylvester Green are going to be talking about their experience of this nauseating event. And finally, a report issued 2 years ago, September 5th, 2017, to the world community about the continuity of genocidal crime. And in it, we describe in great detail how the crimes of yesterday continue today. The disappearance of Aboriginal women is directly related to and caused by the very same individuals and forces that slaughtered over 60,000 residential school children. And these same forces and actors are at work. So we think it's important people learn this evidence. This is kind of a little teach-in today you're going to hear on the air. Leading up to, of course, tomorrow, Canada Day, will be the announcement of some new initiatives. The Republic of Canada, which was formed in 2015, is actually sponsoring and establishing the jurisdiction under which, along with the Squamish Nation, we will be hosting the September 16th tribunal in Vancouver, so that if the police show up to try to stop things or disrupt it, as they often do, we will say, go away, we're under a separate jurisdiction, the jurisdiction of the Republic and the landlocked jurisdiction of the Squamish Nation. So we'll be talking about that next week, but today we're going to be covering some of our bases. Now, I want to remember today, especially remind folks, if you're in Vancouver, July 10th to 16th is the Synod of the Anglican Church at the Wall Center, it's called, at right across the St. Andrews Wesley, the notorious St. Andrews Wesley United Church. Now, a number of these people who are going to be attending the Anglican Synod have already been indicted and summoned to the September 16th tribunal. This includes the Anglican primate, Fred Hiltz, Bishop Bob Bennett, Michael Miller, Archbishop of the Catholic Church in Vancouver, Gary Patterson, former moderator of the United Church, all of these people named, they will be at this event July 10th to 16th. And as we've described before, our intel tells us that on the midnight of the final day of this week-long conclave by the Anglicans, there will be a Ninth Circle sacrificial event in the tunnel complex leading from that area of the city down to the Vancouver Club and the waterfront, where we know the Vancouver satanic network known as the 12 Mile Club operates. So that's from hard evidence from insiders. So we are calling on everyone to show up during that time. We are going to be having people inside and outside disrupting this event, because this event involves the killing of children. Now, it's a fact, folks, that, when we played the pipes earlier, leading into the show, that's how my people used to summon one another in times of great crisis, war, famine, other crises. The pipes would summon people down from the hills. We are summoning you now. Whether or not you respond is your, let it be on your conscience, but the summons has gone out. We must gather to stop these criminals once and for all. So that's putting out the call to all of you, anyone of conscience, to come starting July 10th, right through that following week, at the Wall Center on Burrard Street in downtown Vancouver. That's where this satanic network is going to be meeting under the guise of the 42nd Synod of the Anglican Church of Canada. So without further ado, we're going to listen to these recordings today. The first one having to do with the evidence of genocide, the second, the cover-up of the so-called TRC, the farce that that constituted, and finally, our September 15th report on the continuity of genocidal crime in Canada. Now, to follow all this work, go to murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates, and follow this information, thecommonland@gmail.com. If you want to be involved, I implore you, be involved if you want to save the life of a child and take back our nations. So until next week, learn today, spread the message, stay strong, stay clear. I thank you.
Hello, this is Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. On November 5th, history was made by the convening of the first International Common Law Court of Justice. This court was convened to judge the guilt of heads of state and heads of churches for crimes against humanity and for unspeakable crimes against children. The full proceedings of the opening session of this court can now be viewed online at www.itccs.org. But for your own edification, and to promote the work of the court and the cause of justice, we have created this short sample of some of the key testimonies in this first session of the court. We ask you to post this sample online and especially share it with your local media, educators, and other sympathetic people. The second session of our court will convene during the third week in November 2012. We ask you to keep posted for that at itccs.org. Thank you.
Irene Fable, I'm 75. I went to a residence and school in Muskogee in 1941 to 1949. And I had a very, very rough life. I was mistreated in every way. As a young girl, she was 7 years old. She was pregnant. And what they did, she had her baby. They took the baby, wrapped it up in a nice pink outfit, took it downstairs. I was in the kitchen with the nun for cooking supper. They took the baby into the, where they make a fire and all that to heat up the school, furnace room. They threw that little baby in there and burnt it alive. All you could hear was, that was it. And you could smell the flesh cooking. It's a big mistake when people say we were treated good. No way.
So after my brother got better, he needed to go back to the mush hole. And we didn't go back for that next year. But it was some time after that, during the time that that we were out of school for the summer, that he had, and we were going to go back. And he said, you know what happened to all of those kids that were there at the mush hole? He said, do you remember that? And I said, yeah. I said, our dorm was just full of girls. And he said, yeah, so was ours full of boys. And he said, do you know what happened to them? And I said, no. And he said, they called in the army and they took them to the army base and they shot them. They stood them all along this big hole and they shot them. And as when the bullets hit them, they fell into the hole. And he said, when they were all done, he said, those that hadn't fallen into the hole, some of them were still alive. He said, some of them were still alive in the hole. And he said, they came along. I want to say a bulldozer. That's what comes to my mind, but I'm not really sure that my brother had said a bulldozer. They came along with a big machine anyway, and they shoved them all in that big hole and they covered it up. And he says, that's what happened to them. And I must have been about 8, I guess, or 7 or 8, somewhere through there. Let's see, that must have been 43 or 44.
Here we are, second day of the dig.
near the mush hole. And this is an area about 100 yards from the school where we found consistent bone samples. And these regular types of buttons, probably off of, well, clothing, obviously. But the interesting thing is here and at the Glebe site, they're of the same style as if they're off a standard uniform or something. Could be a child's button off a school uniform.
Scary. Finding those little skulls in there. What were those little skulls? Where did they come from?
Could you describe what they looked like?
Tiny little ones. Two little skulls. Tiny baby ones.
And they're in here.
I feel that fear we had running upstairs to that door.
And I spent 5 years in the Canadian government calls it residential schools, but really these were prisoner of war camps. I was one in the one called the Mohawk Institute. Starved us, beat us, froze us, and it was horrific. There was no controls in the place. Kids were always getting beat up or being put through various torture rituals. A lot of the kids were tortured in there. They were made to hang off a hot pipe stola. They couldn't hold on anymore, and they just fell to the floor from the roof. And they were beaten. Whenever someone felt like it, made to hold on to electric fences.
And the ministry found out I was pregnant, and they told me to have an abortion. And after I have the abortion, to have a tubal ligation so I won't have any more children. They said if I didn't have a tubal ligation, then I would never see my daughter Patricia again.
Fern is going burning 24/7, which was totally out of bounds. And me and a friend witnessed two of the sisters or brothers taking look like little bodies under white wrappings or white cloth, and putting into the furnace. And the Queen came and visited for about 3 days, I don't know how long it was, I think it was about 3 days actually, and a lot of children went missing there. Many children that weren't cooperative, like myself, wasn't cooperative, and they were put into with the children who were sick with at the end of the dormitory. They kept the sickies there, the ones who were sick with tuberculosis, and they put me and my brother Ernie in with the ones who were sick because we wouldn't comply.
In the same room with people who had TB, they didn't separate us.
Then we were forced to play with them. The nuns made us play with those kids. We didn't want to get sick either, but they were forcing us to play with those kids. And also, they made some of them sleep with the other kids.
I would have loved to have seen the perpetrators severely punished for all of this. And I would have, the greatest thing I would want to see is the Church of England get barred from practicing in Canada.
It's just insane. Like, you don't murder children and get away with it. And I work every day to protect children, and it just really bothers me that so many of our children have been killed. And nothing's ever been done about it. Like, you read about it, and there's information on it all over the place, but nothing's ever been done about it. So why should these people, the churches and the government and Indian Affairs, were all in on this as well, why should they get away with killing our children? It's just not right, and something needs to be done about it.
My name is Shauna Green. I am from Sampson Cree Nation, which is in Hobima, Alberta. I've been living in British Columbia since I was 17 years old. I'm 33 now. And I attended the TRC conference in Victoria in April of 2012. And I was quite disturbed by a lot of the things that I saw. First of all, I was disturbed by the amount of money that was spent on the whole event. It was put on at the Empress Hotel. There was literature. I don't know how many pieces of paper I got, pens, little pins, whole bunch of stuff. I just couldn't believe how much money was spent on a show. The minute I got there, I just knew that this was a great big show to bury what really went on with the government and the churches involved. The first day I went was the Friday. Where they had a big celebration at night. I went as a drummer, and I attended the night ceremony. What put me off and what put a lot of people off is that BC Hydro did a great big presentation. And they did this screen show first on a big screen, and they showed only the happy pictures of residential school. They didn't show the pictures of, you know, all the kids that had tuberculosis put together in the same room as healthy children. They didn't show those pictures. They didn't show of the children that had no teeth and the children that had their hair cut off that were crying. They just showed these happy pictures of children in clean uniforms and smiling. I could not understand the first night why Shaw Cable put on a presentation and why BC Hydro was there. It made no sense. But once learning about things from Unrepentant, it made sense. It proved to me that really these big corporations that are making money, they are still working together with the churches, or big companies like that wouldn't care and they wouldn't be there. So that was my first impression of Friday night. I had decided that I wanted to do my own statement. So I was determined to get up. The next morning I got up really early and I made sure that I was in Victoria because I live about 40 minutes away from Victoria. I was determined to go and give my statement. And so I had it arrived just in time, but they had told me that they already had their public speakers chosen. And I had found out the guidelines for the being chosen. You have to, they ask you what you're going to say. Basically, they want to know what you're going to go up there and say. And then they must go from a list and pick, okay, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe, and then they let those people speak. So I definitely was not. I for one, was too late. Or they just simply saw my intent and decided they didn't want to have me up there publicly speaking to people. So I gave my private statement. The only question that they did ask, or the only legal thing that they did tell me was that two legal things is that they could use my audio recording anywhere they wanted, whenever they wanted, and that the only thing they really did seem to care about is if I said that I was going to harm myself, or if my child was being harmed, they had to report that. But nothing about, like, you know, if there were crimes committed, they were going to help you fix it, or if you knew of crimes being committed, they were going to help you. Like, there was nothing, anything like that. It was a great big show. There was another impression to me that the money that was given to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was spent on a show. It's a big show. So I gave my statement anyways. I did it in a way just because I wanted to heal a little bit, and I just wanted the experience so I could talk about it. And so I did my thing, and then I still was determined to go and give my statement, which I did later out in the public. But that morning we went to the big hall, and I think it was the main room for the TRC, And I walked in right when the one of the bishops, a couple bishops were there, Archbishop was there, and some priests from the Anglican Church, the United Church, and a Presbyterian Church, I'm sure. I wish I would have gotten the names of who was speaking and where they were from, but all I know is that I walked into a room of lies, in a room of people covering up their, I don't know, I walked into, like, it just felt like a big theater, like the feeling in the room, like that they were going to crucify someone. It was awful in there. The first person that I heard speaking was a priest, and I'm not sure where he was from, but he basically told, he was talking about how, like, I can't believe he got the gall to get up to the mic and say, "We took away your children," and he's saying this to a whole bunch of Native residential school survivors. He told them, we took your children away from you because we didn't feel that you could take care of them. We thought that we could give them a better life. And at that point, which I thought was the highlight of the TRC, was when the survivors started yelling, "Liar! Liar! Tell the truth!" Because he wasn't telling the truth. And you could hear it in his voice that he was lying. What bothered me even more is that all these archbishops and these bishops and these priests all got front row, like movie stars. And all the, like, you know, the residential school people should have been in the front row. It was awesome. It was probably like 10 minutes in those people's lives where they felt, I get to stand up for what happened to me. And then big old Justice Marie Sinclair stands up in his $700 shirt, paid for by Canadians' taxes, I'm sure. He gets up and tells them that they have to give respect to the bishops and the priests there, that they have to give them the respect and let them say what they want. You know, and I couldn't believe that, you know, you couldn't even let those people go on for a little while and talk about, you know, this event is supposed to be for them, but they have to be quiet. That's what I don't understand. So after Marie Sinclair sat down and everyone did become silent, they did respect what he said. This woman who was saying, "Liar, liar," trying to stand up for herself, she just broke down in tears and wailed like someone had just died. Probably part of her heart just broke because she probably felt she had the chance to stand up for herself and then was crushed by one of her own people. So more archbishops and priests got up and talked about how they thought they were doing the right thing and how that they, and I don't recall sorry ever being said. I recall just this attitude, like, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that there was no responsibility. White people could just talk, like, talk and talk and talk forever. But it seemed like when the Native people talked, that they had, like, there was always, like, a worker or one of the TRC workers by them. And it was to watch that they didn't say anything that would jeopardize this whole, you know, like, that would embarrass the situation. And the same thing happened to me. Like, I was definitely watched. The Friday of the night before, I just wanted to take a picture of all the different things, the funding of who was funding the TRC. And I didn't have a piece of paper, so I was just taking pictures.
Could you list who funded the TRC?
Yeah, it was Shaw Cable, BC Hydro, the United Church, the Anglican Church of Canada, and the Presbyterian churches, all funded. And these are the very people that, and of course the government of Canada, these are the very people that put people in residential school. The very people that created all this chaos for the Native people and then have the gall to say, "We were just trying to help you." I had all these copies burned of Unrepentant because I think every Canadian should probably see Unrepentant, because it's the truth. It's the truth of what happened in Canada. And I, first of all, tried to have it played through my job. I tried to have it played at the filming. They were going to have some screenings at residential school. And I had Unrepentant on the list, and it sounded like we were going to have it played. And then, like, 2 days before it happened, it got pulled, which I kind of thought would happen. I was hoping it wouldn't, but it did. And then I ended up not being able to do what I was going to do. And then so I just burned my own copies, brought them there on Saturday. And I was just kind of, I went up to the media and tried to get them to take one. And she wouldn't take one. As soon as I said Kevin Annette's name, she just, her face changed, her body language changed. And I just asked her if she would even watch it, and she just said, no, probably not. And so I took back my Unrepentant DVD, and it just seemed like a lot of people didn't want me to show it. And the TRC did not want it played there. And I asked, she was an assistant to one of the commissioners, and I asked her why she wouldn't play Unrepentant. And I already knew the answer, but I said it to her, and she just scoffed at me. She just went, oh, like, you silly Native girl. Like, it was insane, the reaction to this film. And that's how I knew that this whole TRC thing is just a big show. It's just a big fakery. It's like these people met in a room, these bad people, they met in a room, and they decided, you know, let's have a big show to make it look like we're helping them. In reality, they knew that the TRC would bring out these hearings, that it would bring out emotions and post-traumatic stress disorder and suicide. They knew that. It's part of this Native killing machine. Because if these people truly wanted to help people and wanted things to change, they would have let me handle Unrepentant. They would have played Unrepentant, because they wouldn't be afraid. But that's how afraid people are of the truth. And that's why Unrepentant wasn't played at the TRC, because it is the most honest thing about what happened. And because all those people who are involved, the Anglican Church, the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, of course, the Protestant Church, all of these people with the government, and now bigger companies like BC Hydro, Shaw Cable, like, these are energy companies. Like, they're all working together. It's all business, and they're using religion and politics to blind people. When they're just big, fat businessmen, or business ladies, businessmen, they don't give a crap about people. They don't give a crap about taxpayers, you know? The Indians are the best excuse, or the best scapegoat, you know, politicians and church people will ever have. And that's why we need to stand up and not take it anymore.
My name is Sylvester Green, and I live here in Vancouver. I've been here for 21 years, and originally from Hazelton, B.C., and I went to Edmonton Residential School for 10 years. And this year, March 2nd, for 3 days there, they had Truth and Reconciliation Forum, and different people from around the world came. I didn't really care about the TRC forum, because there was no chance for us survivors to speak. And I was very disappointed in what was going on there. They said for us not to mention any names of the perpetrators. But I said, on those two cameras in front of everybody in the circle there, I said, this is all bullshit. I said, here's the names of the people that abused me, three white assholes that abused me in Edmonton. I said, Jim Ludford and Mr. Moore and McCatherine, Burns McCatherine. I said, these bastards are... they're the ones that abused me when I was a little kid. And
When you spoke, it wasn't at the TRC, it was in the healing circle, was it?
It was in the talking circle.
So in the TRC forum, they didn't let survivors speak?
No, we weren't allowed to, well, not allowed. They had mics there, but never had an open mic for us survivors to speak.
How many survivors would you say were there?
From what I remember, all I could think of is about 10 survivors there. And let's see, that was all. And none of the survivors got up and spoke.
A report issued by the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State on September 5, 2017. A report on the continuity of genocidal crimes in Canada, an appeal to the people and governments of the world, based on evidence found at www.murderbydecree.com. Preamble. This report is written with the blood of countless Aboriginal children and of those who have died to bring the truth of their fate to light. It is the culmination of a 20-year citizen-led campaign to document, confront, and prosecute the deliberate genocide of non-Christian Aboriginal people in Canada by the Vatican, the British Crown, the Government of Canada, and the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Church. The evidence in this report is based on the sworn testimony of 358 survivors of the murderous Indian residential schools where over 65,000 children died between the years 1889 and 1996, and by exhaustive documentation found at murderbydecree.com, as well as the testimonies of eyewitnesses to ongoing crimes against humanity in Canada. It is something more than a miracle that this report has survived the many years of official lies, misinformation, violence, and intimidation waged by these churches and governments against their surviving victims and a handful of truth-seeking Canadians. Despite the enormous and unrelenting campaign of state terror waged against him since 1995, the former United Church clergyman Kevin Annett has been the mainstay and inspiration of this movement at the cost of his family, his livelihood, and his safety. If not for Kevin's unflagging devotion and courage and his heroic persistence against every imaginable odd, this report, as well as the limited compensation and acknowledgement offered by the Canadian government to Indian residential school survivors, would never have come about. We must also acknowledge the 7 Aboriginal members of the ITCCS who have died at the hands of the police and others in the course of publicly surfacing this enormous crime and confronting the churches responsible: Chief Louis Daniels, Edna Phillips, Harriet Nahani, Harry Wilson, Johnny Bingo Dawson, William Coombs, and Ricky LaValle. Their memory and witness, along with the lives of 65,000 children and those who continue to disappear and fall, will always be honored. The report itself follows. 1. A master plan by the Vatican and the Crown of England, acting through the government and churches of Canada to exterminate domestic Indigenous nations, has been in operation since November 25, 1910. This plan was set in motion and maintained by the Crown of England and its Privy Council Office, and the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Church of Canada, along with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the RCMP, the judiciary, and private corporations. As a plan of deliberate church-sponsored genocide, it has been modeled on and tied to similar crimes by the Vatican against non-Catholic peoples across the world. 2. This Canadian plan consisted of a state and church-funded program of systemic intergenerational genocide based initially within the so-called Indian residential school system, modeled on a Jesuit program, and established with state approval and by order in council on July 1, 1920. That system killed more than half of the children incarcerated within it until it formally ended in 1996, or more than 65,000 children. It also served as the launching pad for a general campaign of extermination of the non-assimilated Aboriginal tribes, a campaign that continues to the present time. This genocide has accounted for the massive depopulation of more than 95% of the original Native nations, predominantly on Canada's west coast, a killing off of between 1 and 2 million people since the year 1850. 3. While the general aim of this genocide was the elimination of all non-Christian Native peoples, its associated purpose was the extirpation of traditional Indigenous kinship networks and the matriarchal clan mother system of authority that ensured Indigenous control over lands and resources. This was achieved by wiping out the Native family system and specifically traditional women and their children. That traditional system was in effect destroyed by the Indian residential schools between 1889 and 1996, along with the majority of Indigenous languages and traditional land bases. 4. Despite the phasing out of Indian residential schools after 1972, this genocidal plan intensified at the hands of different branches of the Canadian government and agencies like Catholic-run adoption and foster care groups. Every level of government and church in Canada has continued the active destruction of Indigenous families and their culture, including child welfare and family court systems, and the state-funded Aboriginal band councils themselves. The chiefs of these councils have played a key role in eradicating any lingering Indigenous identity or authority and control over traditional lands and resources. They also routinely engage in the terrorizing and exploiting of their own people, including through the trafficking and sale of tribal children. These so-called chiefs are doing these crimes at the behest and in the payment of the Canadian government and resource extractive multinational corporations from America, Japan, and China. 5. The expulsion of all remaining traditional Native tribes from their West Coast lands assumed greater urgency as the 20th century closed, and the world demand for hydroelectricity, timber, minerals, and other British Columbia resources intensified. Consequently, the period since 1990 has witnessed a rapid escalation of violence against Indians and a return to the brutal methods of the early colonial period. By the 1990s, large numbers of Aboriginal families in northern British Columbia began disappearing at the hands of death squads manned by off-duty RCMP officers and local policemen, as well as third-party contractors hired by the federal government, its Aboriginal frontmen, and foreign corporations. 6. By 1995, when the incipient ITCCS campaign to expose residential school crimes began making headlines in the Canadian media, stories of these disappearances of Native families were also proliferating. Together, these exposures provoked a public misinformation campaign by the RCMP designed to conceal the extent and the nature of the disappearances. This information was only partly successful and prompted the Government of Canada to take firmer measures to erase any public awareness of the ongoing genocide of Native families. It did so by means of a secret government cabinet directive dated April 3, 1998. 7. This directive by the Liberal government of Prime Minister Jean Chrétien was launched barely 1 week before the opening of the first independent inquiry into residential school crimes in Canada, the United Nations-affiliated IRAM Tribunal held in Vancouver. The directive consisted of an official plan of state terror that was aimed at Aboriginal activists, residential school survivors, and the public campaign led by the future ITCCS North American Field Secretary, Kevin Annett, who organized the IRAM Tribunal. The Chrétien Terror Plan authorized the use of black ops methods of illegal monitoring, smears, disruptions, and violence against Kevin Annett and these targeted groups, including the elimination of individuals who held knowledge or evidence of genocidal acts by Canadian church and state employees. This cabinet directive was never revoked and has caused the death of at least 7 Native activists who have been assassinated by RCMP operatives since 1998, including members of the ITCCS network. 8. The cabinet directive in question was issued for implementation by the federal government to E Division of the RCMP in Vancouver in the first week of June 1998, just prior to the convening of the IRAM Tribunal on June 12, 1998. In fact, the disruption of the IRAM Tribunal was the first and primary goal of this state terror campaign, according to statements made by RCMP E Division Inspector Peter Montague, who led the disruption campaign. This disruption became especially active after the tribunal gave a public airing to the first reports of organized murder and child trafficking among northern British Columbia tribes by chiefs in the pay of the federal government. Another target of the state terror plan was the Gustafson Lake natives in central British Columbia, who, after defending the sacred burial lands of their people, were subjected to a covertly organized military assault and follow-up smear campaign by Peter Montague and the RCMP during that same summer of 1998. 9. It is important to note that this Chrétien State Terror Directive of April 3, 1998, was aimed at anyone who threatened to expose the historic and ongoing genocide of Native people. Between 2006 and 2012, seven key eyewitnesses and prominent Indigenous activists of the ICTCCS network in Vancouver and Winnipeg were murdered at the hands of this directive. Harriet Nahani, Johnny Bingo Dawson, Ricky LaValle, Harry Wilson, William Coombs, Edna Phillips, and Chief Louis Daniels. In the process of its state terror campaign, the Chrétien directive disrupted and marginalized the movement to prosecute Canadian church and state for residential school crimes. But for many years, it also concealed the concealing or disappearance of Aboriginal families across British Columbia. For example, after the June 1998 tribunal had been attacked and neutralized by RCMP operatives, the same agents, under the direction of RCMP Inspector Peter Montague, performed a similar destruction of the community effort to identify the growing numbers of missing Native women across BC and in Vancouver's downtown east side. 10. This state-level attack on a genuine missing people's inquiry was prompted by the fact that by this point, in early 1999, startling new evidence began to surface that tied the identity of some of the present-day killers of Native people with men and women who worked in the Indian residential school system. In fact, our work has revealed that the present leadership of the Anglican, Roman Catholic, and United Church of Canada is either directly implicated in residential school-era crimes or is actively protecting those who are, and that these same predators are still engaged in the systemic rape, trafficking, and killing of children. It is therefore clear that a continuity of crime exists that spans decades and links the church-instigated residential school atrocities with the rape, torture, and disappearance of present-day natives, especially women and children. That is, the crime has never stopped and is being protected by the same unholy alliance of church, police, and government. This no doubt explains that trio's unrelenting hostility and sabotage efforts towards the ITCCS campaign and its chief public spokesman and symbol in North America, Kevin Annett. 11. Our continuing investigations reveal that many of the men and women who trafficked, tortured, and killed children in the Indian residential schools and who are still preying on Aboriginal women and children are also members or affiliates of the elite Vancouver Club at 915 West Hastings Street in Vancouver. Their odious ranks include three Supreme Court judges, a battery of lawyers, church officials, and corporate officers, a former prime minister, a Catholic archbishop, and senior members of the RCMP and the Canadian military. Virtually all of these individuals are practicing members of the Anglican, Catholic, or United Church that ran the residential school death camps. Many of these men have also been identified by a former Canadian Security Intelligence Service operative as participants in the murderous Pickies Palace torture and snuff film ring, including two politicians who now serve in the Canadian Senate, former Vancouver Mayor Larry Campbell and Aboriginal puppet leader Patrick Brazeau. 12. The general purpose and consequence of this Chrétien State Terror Directive has been to protect these men and camouflage their links to the residential school era and to present-day corporate power brokers. But what cannot be concealed is the clear and direct connection between the highest levels of governmental, police, corporate, church, and judicial power in Canada and these deliberate genocidal crimes, as well as their ties to similar crimes in other countries. There is, for example, a clear and direct link between the Thailand and China-based organ and human trafficking industry and the disappearance of Aboriginal women in British Columbia. 13. By 2007, once these connections had been firmly proven by our campaign and by the growing testimonies of many Aboriginal eyewitnesses, the Conservative government of Stephen Harper relied on the still-operative Chrétien plan to put a final end to these exposures by placing a definitive spin and containment over the whole issue of past and present genocide in Canada. It did so through its own controlled in-house committee an elaborate deception and obstruction of justice misnamed the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, or the TRC. 14. The TRC was modeled on a standard Black Ops misdirection campaign to create a false narrative on a crime by burying evidence, silencing eyewitnesses, discrediting truth-tellers, and exonerating the guilty. In partnership with the three churches responsible for the residential schools genocide, and with the active compliance of the world media, the United Nations, and every level of judiciary and political power in Canada, the TRC buried the truth and the evidence of the genocide with remarkable ease and success. It did so in order to mask the continuance of that crime, especially among West Coast Native Nations. Accordingly, the TRC was followed closely by a second cover-up effort by the present Liberal government of Canada, known as the National Missing Women's Inquiry. 15. It is clear that this latest stage-managed inquiry is a further enactment of the Chrétien plan to eliminate all witnesses and evidence to Canada's final solution of its Indigenous population that began in 1910. The so-called Missing Women's Inquiry is operating through the very police agencies, including the RCMP, that are responsible for the killing of targeted Native women and their families, and that have concealed these crimes for many years. 16. Like the TRC, the Missing Women Inquiry operates through hand-picked government loyalists who lack any judicial power or mandate to bring charges against the guilty or conduct any genuine investigation. The pseudo-inquiry is actually halting genuine efforts to reveal the crimes and who is responsible for them, and is silencing eyewitnesses who dispute the official accounts of the disappearances. As a controlled stage show run by the very powers responsible for making Native women go missing, the inquiry is moribund, having released no report of any of its supposed findings in the over 2 years of its shadowy existence. We believe this is to ensure that the final destruction of Indigenous peoples and their land base will proceed with maximum profit to the corporate and governmental interests behind that destruction. 17. As proof of this is the burial and obfuscation by the inquiry of a key fact, namely that the West Coast disappearances are the result of specific racial and political targeting and are not random killings. This point was established by our own investigations as early as the spring of 2003. That is, the vast majority of missing Aboriginal women are from matrilineal clan-led families that traditionally control the resources and land bases of the different Indian nations. In short, their killing was in fact the deliberate political assassination of the remaining traditional leaders of West Coast tribes, whose resistance stands in the way of resource-hungry corporations. In that sense, these latest murders are simply the continuation of Canada's long tradition of overt extermination when it comes to Indigenous people and their leaders. 18. These crimes have a darker aspect, involving satanic ritualism that the Iram Tribunal documented in June 1998 during its inquiry into the Indian residential schools. The so-called Ninth Circle, a Catholic sacrificial cult formed in the 17th century by the Jesuits and still in operation under the directives of the highest level of the Vatican, functioned in the Canadian residential schools from their inception. The routine trafficking, torture, and sacrificial murder of children was practiced in the Anglican, Catholic, and United Church Indian schools, and it implicates senior members of the government and the British royal family and these churches. The same Ninth Circle continues to kill with impunity today, including on West Coast Native lands heavily endowed with valuable resources. It is evident that the same forces traditionally behind the theft of Aboriginal lives and lands continue to ritually kill and traffic Native children. 19. Behind its mask of beneficence, as epitomized by its fresh-faced spin-doctoring Prime Minister Trudeau, Canada is a closed and repressive society that is actively exterminating the remaining traditional Indigenous people within its borders. It is doing so according to its foundational genocidal program of 1910 and the 1998 Chrétien Black Ops Directive, and with the act of collusion and in the interest of mostly Chinese and American resource corporations. 20. As a state-led campaign, this culmination of the Canadian genocide has judicial sanction, as is evident in not only the refusal of any Crown Court to prosecute any person or agency for genocidal acts, but by the act of victimization by the same courts of anyone who exposes these crimes. In short, there is no avenue for relief or justice for survivors of this genocide within Canada or in the agencies of the United Nations, which have turned their back on the reality of this ongoing crime by Christian and corporate Canada. 21. Accordingly, it falls on the global community to stand upon international law and bring political and economic sanctions against Canada, the Crown of England, the Vatican, and their church and corporate associates for their proven crimes against humanity. Canada and these powers are rogue bodies whose actions threaten not only the innocent, but the sovereignty and peace of all nations. This threat is evident in the continued standing policy known as crimen solicitanus within the Roman Catholic Church that subverts child protection laws and the power of sovereign governments by requiring that every Catholic in the world protect in-house child abusers and conceal child abuse and trafficking from the police. The Anglican Church of England is governed by the same policy, as will any non-Catholic church that reunifies with the Roman papacy, according to the One World Church plan of the convicted war criminal Jorge Bergoglio, alias Pope Francis. Since its enactment in 1929, crimen solicitanus has encouraged and caused the systematic murder of children in Canada, America, Ireland, Croatia, across Europe and around the world to continue unchecked. As long as such institutionalized criminality against children is allowed to legally operate, no country can claim to be protecting its own citizenry or its own lawful sovereignty. 22. There is a clear moral and legal obligation of sovereign nations to restrain and punish proven criminal regimes like Canada, the British Crown, and the Vatican. We therefore call upon nations to do so, using their full police, military, and legal machinery. We are especially directing this call to President Vladimir Putin, his government, and the people of Russia, and all countries outside the Western Bloc. 23. Specifically, our ITCCS directorate and its affiliates in seven countries ask that these governments undertake the following actions: to commence comprehensive economic and political sanctions against Canada, England, and the Vatican as convicted genocidal regimes, including by seeking their formal censure and expulsion from the General Assembly of the United Nations, and by imposing a trade and tourism embargo on these powers, and by dispatching peacekeeping forces to Canada to protect Aboriginal eyewitnesses, targeted families, and ITCCS activists who are confronting these crimes, and to arrest convicted and suspected war criminals in Canada. Also, to dispatch professionally trained forensic teams to assist in the uncovering and analysis of crime scenes and mass graves at the site of former Indian residential schools and Indian hospitals across Canada. And finally, to convene domestic and international courts of justice to indict and prosecute these individuals and corporate institutions responsible for these and other crimes against humanity. We also call upon the citizens of the world and of Canada to commence their own direct community sanctions against these governments and their churches in accordance with the Nuremberg Principle that compels citizens to neither fund nor cooperate with proven murderous regimes or organizations. These sanctions include denying taxes and any funds to these governments and to the Roman Catholic and United Church of Canada, performing citizens' arrests against known or suspected child-raping clergy and their accomplices, and peacefully seizing the property and wealth of these churches as convicted transnational criminal organizations. In the weeks ahead, our delegation will be bringing this appeal and our evidence to the people, government, educators, jurists, and media of the world. Those of us who have revealed and confronted these crimes within Canada have been assaulted, harassed, imprisoned, and censured by every level of government, the police, and the courts, and we've been prevented from operating freely within our own country. Seven of our comrades have died from foul play at the hands of the police and others. We are therefore bringing this truth beyond Canada's borders for the sake of the army of innocents who have died and will continue to die if justice is not done. Here we stand. We can do no other. Issued today, September 5th, 2017, by the ITCCS Central Directorate, and with the endorsement of elders of the Anishinaabe, Mohawk, Cree, Métis, Cowichan, and Squamish Indigenous nations across Canada, and by ITCCS affiliates in Canada, America, Ireland, England, and Serbia. You can see the entire transcript, including the footnotes and sources, at www.itccs.org. We thank you.
Shh. Strength will come back, honey. Keep your eyes on me. I promise time will fly. Keep your head held high. The world is at your feet. Some people's minds work funny. Just learn to let it be. You're fully in control. There's very few didn't know.